I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad.
You're listening to WGXC Acra. What up, Hudson Catskill? 90.7 FM.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Rachel Shulman. Campa Hudson is hosting a monthly community dinner on Tuesday, February 6th at 5:30 in our Solaris building, 360 Warren Street. Come experience community, meet new people and old friends over a freshly prepared meal made by a local volunteer. Everyone is invited. No one will be turned away. We will be glad to see you there. Please bring a friend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Christopher Lee Brothers Plumbing and Heating of Albany, wishing everyone a joyous holiday season and happy new year. Red Carpet Service and Solutions since 1939. Information at CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Michael Gassman in Arlington, Virginia. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, February 7th. Local early morning temperatures range from 16 degrees in Medusa to 25 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 35 degrees. Do not let those temperatures fool you. The warm bump is still on the way. And credit where credit is due. This time, instead of loquacious smoke signals or bone-chilling cold, Canada is sending us some relatively warm air. High temperature of 41 degrees happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop to 24 degrees, then climb back up, hitting 47. Overnight, temps dip to 31, and that takes us briefly below freezing in the wee morning hours. And then we get 48 degrees on Friday afternoon, which is now looking dry with anticipated moisture pushed into Saturday. That will give us a rainy afternoon with a high of 55. Sunset today will be at 5:02 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:58 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is still pretty angry, with X-class flare chances at 25%. Plasma winds will be average at 514 kilometers per second, with a thin density of around 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are okay below 4 MHz till dark, then fair below 60 MHz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 175. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that shit out! And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Can we cut the chit-chat?
Oh, yeah.
Cut the chit-chat. To be back in our Black History Month edition of Chick Chat. And who we got here today?
Bree. I'm all alone. Julie didn't feel well.
Yeah, this is the two of us today. And we sure hope Jaleesa feels better real soon. Because we miss you, Jaleesa. Yes, yes, yes. Well, we got our Black History Month edition of Chick Chat. We got some things we're going to talk about in terms of Black History Month. But first, Bree, let me just ask, how was school for you?
Okay, today at school was not that great, but not in a, like, it was a really bad day. It was just, like, I was really dehydrated the whole day, and it kind of brought my mood down, because first period, I have gym, and right now we're doing swimming, because I'm an underclassman, and the chlorine really messed with my lungs, and it was making me wheezy. My brother bought me water, but because I was in chemistry, I couldn't leave to go get it. I left it in my locker, and then the lady who monitors, like, the bathroom and stuff didn't let me go to the locker, so I was just dehydrated the whole day. I just gave up.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? Maybe you can have your parent intervene with a note asking that you be allowed to get water if you need it after gym. Because if the chlorine is strong and you need to, you know, get that washed out of your throat, inhaling it through your nose and maybe swallowing some of it with your mouth, you know?
Yeah, she's really crazy about that kind of stuff. And she's been, like, at our school for a while, but I found out today that she used to work at a prison. So I guess she's just super strict. And I know her from church. Like, I used to go to church with her and her twin and stuff. But she's just gotten really mean.
Well, like
she doesn't let anybody in the bathroom without their last name on a pass. If she thinks the pass is written wrong, she won't let you in the bathroom. She locked the bathroom.
Well, safety, unfortunately, is a concern in our public schools, you know, and I think even some of our private schools. So I can see, you know, to err on the side of caution, you know, it might be a little overreach, but better safe than sorry, right?
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, if your parent provides you with a note, that people will respect that. You know, I know you and I know you wouldn't abuse it. So, you know, and they'd know that too. Does that sound like an intervention?
I might, but I know that the teachers are having a meeting soon because they've been getting quite a lot of complaints about people not being allowed into the bathroom lately. So the teachers are going to try to bring it up to the superintendent and the principal at the meeting, because the principal was like, well, the one thing that I can't control is the vacuum bathroom monitor, because everybody's scared of her. So not sure how far we're gonna get there.
Okay, well, you keep me informed.
Okay.
All right, so yeah, you also had a dance recently.
Oh yeah, the Queen of Hearts dance. It went very, very well. I danced literally out of my shoes. They are now unwearable. I had to throw them away. And my legs have been sore for the past 3 days, but it was completely worth it. I got to take home a little heart balloon, and it's so cute.
Sounds like it was a really good time.
It was.
I'm so glad that you all had that opportunity. That's a memory that will keep with you for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now we're talking about Black history. And so what's happening in school regarding Black history? Any emphasis on that?
Okay, so my ASL teacher, I like to brag about her because she's just so great. Miss Isles is the best ASL teacher ever. Not that I've ever met a different one. But every year we do a whole Black History Month project and stuff. And so far this year we've been doing a timeline, and we do like 2 slides of it a day. So right now we're talking about like Andrew Foster and all these kind of Black deaf idols and stuff. So Andrew Foster, how he was the first Black deaf person to attend Gallaudet and graduate from college, and how the NAD didn't allow Black deaf people to protest. Like, they just straight up said no and all that kind of stuff, and equal rights. And we learned all the signs for it.
And so ASL, for those who may not know what that stands for, what is that?
American Sign Language.
Right. So your American Sign Language teacher, who happens to be a Black African-American woman, is really gung-ho about Black History Month, huh?
Yeah, she's really good at all the holidays. I feel like we do class parties and stuff, and all of our projects are like based around what's going on in the world, and they're just so fun. I love doing that class, but I can't take it next year. I'm not going on to ASL4. I can't survive it.
Well, you know what? You proved us all wrong by sticking with ASL3. Let me tell you, what those grades up.
It's hard.
Yes. So, okay. So any other classes? Because that's American Sign Language. I would think something like history or social studies or global studies or something would have some stuff going on too.
Okay. So I'm also in Global 10 Honors, and I have a really good teacher in there too. But I've noticed that she doesn't really talk about holidays. But also, on the other side, I noticed that a couple of my teachers, they're just not very into holidays. They don't mention them or anything, or we don't do projects on them. But I feel like in history class, like, I don't know, I feel like we would have, like, a one-day topic on something. Like, it's Black History Month, and I just feel like we would have, like, at least, like, a Happy Black History Month or something. And none of that came up. Right now we're talking about the Russian Revolution. I turned in my packet today super early. I just like to point that out because I don't normally turn in my packets for the class. But wow. I just thought she'd talk about it and she didn't.
And I think she missed Martin Luther King's birthday too, huh?
Yeah, she didn't mention anything about that. And I don't know. It's weird to me, but it might not be weird to her because she hasn't mentioned any other holidays either, except for like have a good Christmas break, because I feel like everybody says that whether like Christmas or celebrated or not. I don't know.
Well, although Christmas is like, you know, one of my favorite holidays, obvious reasons, and Thanksgiving too, obvious reasons. But celebrating, you know, the first and only Black African-American to have a holiday and his impact on our nation and on our world, it seems like it's something that they would not overlook in a history class, right?
Yeah.
Well, we hope that the month is not over yet, and we hope that she has something planned and in store for you all. You keep me up to date on that.
I will keep you up to date.
Okay. So now for Black History Month, you and I had an assignment to find an unsung hero from Black history. And so who did you pick?
Okay. I picked Claudette Colvin. She's an African-American civil rights activist. She's still alive today. She's, I think, 82 or 83. She was born in 1939. She and her younger sister, Delphine, who passed away at a younger age, were brought up by their great aunt and uncle in a poor Black neighborhood when they took on the last name Colvin from their great aunt and uncle. She went to Booker T. Washington High School in Montgomery, where she studied really hard and earned straight A's. On March 2nd, 1955, she was 15, and she was on the bus on her way home from school. And she was a pregnant teenager who had dark skin. She was on a crowded and segregated bus in Montgomery. And the bus driver demanded that her, along with a couple of other Black students, that they get up for some white people to have seats. She was arrested and spent a few hours in the local jail. Evidently, she was charged with disturbing the peace, breaking segregation, and was found guilty later on with assaulting a police officer. She was ultimately sentenced to probation. She didn't become as famous as Rosa Parks because she was dark-skinned and pregnant and poor, and that just wasn't as appealing to the public to support. After the event, she moved to New York City in hopes of finding work as a single mom. Since she chose not to speak about what happened in Montgomery, it was swept into a box and stacked away. She went on to study at college and became a nurse's aide, where she worked as for 35 years until she retired in 2004. In 2021, her charges were lifted, and finally, she can live as in no longer convicted. What's the word for it? Because it's not a felony.
Misdemeanor.
Oh, a convicted juvenile.
A convicted juvenile.
Yeah.
Offender. Convicted juvenile offender. So in 2021, when
yeah,
she was
66 years after she was charged.
66 years after she was charged. And I guess that was during the Biden administration, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I forgot to write it down, but her and I think three other Black women went to court in 1955 when she was charged and stuff. And they argued the segregation law and stuff, and they won. And it was only a few months after she gave birth to her son, and that's her only kid.
Oh, that was her only child. Well, you know, I had heard about her. As a matter of fact, I heard there were a couple of people before Rosa Parks. Mm-hmm. But I had heard about her, but I didn't remember her name. So thank you for, you know, reintroducing me to her and for giving me some more backstory to her story. And not me alone, but our listeners as well. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of unsung heroes in Black history and in the civil rights movement. And hopefully your history teacher, your global studies, whatever that subject is, mm-hmm. will take opportunity to introduce to the class a couple of them.
I also had a quote for her, but I forgot to write it down. So if we have time later, I'll tell you guys.
Okay. Well, I have Annie Malone, and she was born in 1877. She died in 1957. She was about 80 years old when she passed, and she was one of America's first and most prominent African-American business women.
Here's Hudson Valley band Mercury Rev with The Dark is Rising.
Someone somewhere in this song. mystery. The words that flow between friends, winding streams without end. I wanted you to see, but it can't seem surprising.
When she plays a toy piano, woodland animals come round. Little birds sit on her shoulder, wondering how she makes that sound. When she plays the toy piano with her arabesques and trills, she's a wonder. We all love her, but it doesn't pay the bills. She should sell that toy piano, move to town and get a job, buy a studio apartment, settle down and marry Bob. When one plays the toy piano, it drowns out the slithering time, but it's oozing up the stairs now, and she hasn't got a dime. When she plays the toy piano, she is ransoming her youth. Like a ketamine addict in an isolation booth. When she plays the toy piano, when she makes her so-called art, she defiles her papa's tombstone. She is breaking mama's heart. She is breaking, breaking, 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 breaking mama's heart.
That was When She Plays the Toy Piano, local music from the Hudson-based Magnetic Fields from their 2020 album Quickies.
Next, here is 2022 new music from Karen Schomer, the Columbia County-based poet and sound artist Peter Taylor. Their album is called Agro Dulce, and this song is called Do You Remember the Factory That Burned?
This road wasn't here. This alley wasn't here. The stream became a reservoir. The flood came down the hill past the Catholic Church. This was a stream. It shouldn't be a lake. The bridge is too low. Water can rise past it. Dead branches clog the dam. Sunlight grazes pasture, which was woods, which was a farm, which was a factory. A wall, a plain old wall. new map lies on the old map. We set the clocks back. A different sun rises over a different ridge. I fall asleep and levitate. Trees lift the roof off the house. I sleep with pines. Their branches are sturdy, but unkind. I don't love you anymore. I don't.
As you all know, the Catskill Mountains are just about over that way, and have for generations been considered an enchanted place, as they still are today. Well, at the base of these mountains, if you were to get out on Route 23A, just past 32, the area there between what is now Catskill and what is now Palinville, well, somewhere in there, there was a small village. In colonial times, and in that village, lived Rip Van Winkle. Well, the story of Rip Van Winkle was found among the papers of the late Dietrich Knickerbocker, who was a fictitious author invented by Geoffrey Crayon, an old Dutch gentleman. He himself was a fictitious author created by Washington Irving, who, as we now know, is responsible for our knowing the story of Rip Van Winkle. Gather around and all ye shall hear how Rip Van Winkle fell asleep for 20 years. Well, of course, I'm not giving away the story by saying that Rip Van Winkle fell asleep for 20 years. Everybody knows that. In fact, some people think that Rip Van Winkle was asleep for 100 years, or even 200 years. But it was 20 years. But that's no small potatoes. A lot can happen in the span of a generation. Enough to leave you bewildered if you were to go away and to come back. Why, just on my way here today, I met a woman across the street who said that she hadn't been to this spot in 25 years, and her mind was blown to see this place again. I'm sure little of it has changed, though everything around it must have changed some. Well, Rip Van Winkle, he was an affable, an easygoing, good-natured young man, and was much beloved in the community. Moreover, he was an obedient and henpecked husband. It's perhaps owing to this meekness of disposition that he was so universally beloved in the village. But it is said that obsequious and conciliating men abroad are often under the strict discipline of shrews at home, which in many ways are considered a tolerable blessing. But if so, Rip Van Winkle was thrice blessed. children would shout with joy when he approached. He assisted in their games, made their playthings, taught them to fly kites, and to shoot marbles. They would climb on his back and hang from his coattails. And never a dog from the neighborhood would bark at him. He was very popular with the young ladies of the village as well. He would help them in all sorts of household chores and odd jobs that their husbands would not do for them. He was not afraid of helping to build stone walls or husk Indian corn, but he would attend to anyone else's business except his own. His farm was neglected, the fences falling down, the corn was ragged, the cow would get out amongst the cabbages, and his children were as wild and ragged as if they had belonged to no one. And his son, Rip, little urchin that he was, showed promise of inheriting his father's traits. Dame Van Winkle would scold him for his carelessness, his idleness, his thoughtlessness, and for letting his family go to ruin. To escape these scoldings and to find some peace of quiet, Rip would go to the local inn, where there was a sort of club of sages and philosophers and other idle persons of the village. Nicholas Vedder was the landlord of the inn and the leader of this group. When his opinion was wanted, all they had to do was watch the way he smoked his pipe. He would say nothing. But if something displeased him, he would draw on his pipe and emit short, frequent, angry bursts of smoke. But if something pleased him, he would draw on his pipe and spin out a long, tranquil cloud. He would sit in the shade of the tree, and as the sun moved, he would sit from his spot on the bench and shift over to wherever else there was shade under the tree. And by this fashion, the villagers could tell what time it was, for he was as accurate as any sundial. Until Dame Van Winkle would show up and scold Nicholas Vedder, too, for assisting her husband in his idleness. So Rip and his dog left the inn, passed the sign where there was a portrait of King George III hanging from the front of the inn, and walked up the mountain into the woods with his dog Wolf. Even the dog Wolf felt persecuted by Dame Van Winkle, who regarded him as his companion in idleness. Well, Rip and his dog Wolf finally reached the top of the mountain and sat down on a moss-covered precipice from which he could see and survey all of the Hudson Valley. He could see the future site of the bridge that was to bear his name in the 1930s. He could see the future site of the Catskill Game Farm, which closed a few years ago, and the future site of the Ace of Burgers, which closed its doors forever just this past February. And the spot he sat on was itself the future site of the Rip Van Winkle Inn, which was built in the 1860s and frequented by people going up the long mountain road to go to the Catskill Mountain House. But when the Otis Elevator Company built a cog railway up the mountain, both the road and the inn fell into disrepair, and the inn burned to the ground in 1918. Suddenly, Rip heard a voice, and he looked around to see who was calling him and heard, "Rip Van Winkle! Rip Van Winkle!" But when he looked to see who it was, there was only a crow circling overhead. Then he heard it again. "Rip Van Winkle!
Winkle, Winkle!
Rip Van Winkle!
Winkle, Winkle!"
Then he saw a stout, squarely built man, dressed in antique Dutch garb, hauling a wooden keg of liquor up the mountain. he silently signaled Rip to join him in carrying his burden. And Rip complied. They both walked up the gully until they came to a clearing where there were jagged precipices, with gnarled trees with their roots hanging off the edge of the cliff, their branches poking into the sky. There was an assembly of men also dressed like this strange man, in old-fashioned Dutch clothes, wearing several pairs of breeches, and playing at ninepins. And when they would throw the ball, Rip thought he heard a sound like rolling thunder. They began to drink from this keg, and very gravely they signaled Rip to join them. He took a draught, and then another, and another, until he began to swim and feel so addled that he fell into a deep sleep. When Rip awoke, it was morning, and he saw that he had been asleep all night. "Oh, I am going to catch hell from Dame Van Winkle when I return," he thought. He looked for his dog, but his dog was gone. And he looked for his gun, and his gun was propped up there, all rusted, and the stock all worm-eaten. At first he thought those men were playing a trick on him and stole his dog and gun. But he could find no one on the mountain, and so he descended. But the gully that he and his companion had walked up the mountain on was now a ripping mountain stream, gurgling, burbling. He called for his dog. "Wolf!" he cried. But the only answer he got was from a crow on a lonely branch, as though it were scoffing at him. When he reached the base of the mountain, he saw some people he had never seen before. "That's strange," he thought. "I thought I knew everyone in these parts." They looked at him quizzically. They stared at him. They scratched their chins. And this made Rip scratch his own chin. And he discovered that his beard had grown a foot long. When he reached the village, he saw that it was larger and had grown more populous. There were new houses he had never seen, and his old haunts had disappeared. He went to his house. His house was deserted and covered with cobwebs, the windows broken, a desolate place. There was a half-starved dog that looked like Wolf that was skulking around, but when Rip called him by name, the dog growled at him and skulked away. He went to the inn, and there was the picture of King George hanging down. But it had been repainted so that his blue coat, his red coat, was changed to blue, and instead of a scepter, there was a sword, and underneath, an inscription saying, "General Washington." And where the shady tree had stood, there was a naked pole with something that looked like a red nightcap on the top of it, with some stars and some stripes. Instead of Nicholas Vedder, there was a bilious young man there with tracts sticking out of his pocket, making vehement harangues about Congress, about the spirit of 76, about citizens' rights. He saw Rip Van Winkle and came up to him and said, "Are you a Federalist or a Democrat?" Rip Van Winkle said, "I am just a harmless man and a subject of our King George III." To which the young man said, "A Tory, a Tory, a spy, a refugee. Off with him, away from him, a loyalist Tory enemy." "Who are you, and what are you doing here? Who are you to see?" said the bilious young man. I just came here to see some of my old friends who would hang around at the inn, said Rip. What are their names? Demanded the man. Rip said, Nicholas Vedder? Nicholas Vedder? Why, he's been dead and gone these past 18 years. Rip asked the names of some of his other friends. And he was told, well, they are gone these years too, killed in the wars. And one of them, why, now he is a member of the Congress. All of this talk of wars, of Congress, of citizens' rights, the spirit of 76, these things had no meaning to Rip Van Winkle. Until he asked, does anyone here know Rip Van Winkle? Oh, Rip Van Winkle, of course, they said. Why, that's him standing over there, against that tree. And Rip looked and saw a young man in his 20s, who is as equally ragged as himself. Well, if that's Rip Van Winkle, he asked, then who am I? I don't know who I am. If that's him, then I'm not me. Oh, me, all everything has changed. I am not myself, oh, I don't know who I am or what's my name. Rip was bewildered. Then a young woman came up to see who the strange man was. She carried a chubby child who was crying at the sight of this grizzled old man. Hush, Rip, she said. Hush, Rip. He won't harm you. And the name and the sound of her voice stirred a recollection in him. What is your name? He asked the young woman. My name is Judith, she said. And what was your father's name? Rip Van Winkle, she said. But he has been away for a long time. We haven't seen him in 20 years. What of your mother? Oh, well, my mother died a couple of years ago. She burst a blood vessel while scolding a New England peddler. Then Rip understood. He said, I am your father. I was once young, Rip Van Winkle. Now old, Rip Van Winkle. I am your father, and Rip over there, he is my son. Sure enough, said one of the old-timers from the village, that's Rip Van Winkle. My goodness, where have you been these long 20 years? Told them the whole story, and how he had been asleep, and how he must have been enchanted. But people thought him out of his wits. Some did not believe him, but others did. In any event, he was welcomed back into the village, and he spent many, many hours sitting in front of the inn, listening to people talk of politics. But politics made no impression on Rip's heart. He was only glad to be free of the one form of despotism he knew, petticoat government. He cast his eyes upwards in a gesture of what could be considered either resignation to his fate or his deliverance. Yes, a lot can happen in 20 years, and perhaps in 20 years' time people will look upon you and I as being backward, old-fashioned, incompetent, sexist, and generally uncouth.
Gather, O ye, and all children hear how Rip Van Winkle fell asleep for 20 years.
The Center for Law and Justice is co-hosting a Black History film series starting on February 8th, 2024. And to get an idea of the films that will be shown, I'm now joined by Tashawn Murdoch, Director of Operations at the Center for Law and Justice. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So why is the Center of Law and Justice, why did you decide to show a film series?
So we actually have had film series in the past. I would say we probably have been on a two-year hiatus, partly, you know, because of COVID and not being able to come together on an in-person basis. But the film series have been happening for a while, specific to highlighting a specific theme or topic related to under-marginalized, underserved, and underprivileged communities, and celebrating Black history, and also talking about the needs of people of color.
What has the film industry's role been in educating people and miseducating people on Black history and promoting justice?
Loaded question. You know, I think, you know, we'll start with the negatives. I think sometimes people want to, or the media industry or film industry wants to ignore what the truth is. And so what you find a lot of times is that we are either promoting misinformation to avoid the truth, or we are editing the information so that it does not portray what the true story is. On top of that, you know, and to me, film also leads to writing. And so what we're seeing too is the elimination or the sequestering of books and films that talk about the true history. And so, you know, on the negative side, you know, I think people thwart it or edit it, you know, the information to prevent the truth from being told. But on the positive, when the truth is able to be told, we find our people are have more of an understanding of what the true history is. And we also have to face what that reality is, which means that we sometimes have to have uncomfortable conversations and that we have to talk about, you know, the trauma that some of the things that have been done to people of color, what that trauma and what those effects are. And so I think that it has its negatives and its positives. Our goal is on the positive side is that we want to utilize the films that are being shown. One, to highlight the history, right? But two, to remind people why, and of course this year it's around voting, the importance of voting and how that affects a variety of different things in our communities.
So as you mentioned, the theme is voting. What are the films that were selected for the film series?
So we, on February 8th, we're going to show excerpts from The Journey to Freedom, which was in some sense released on this past Saturday, February 3rd. And so we'll show some excerpts with Dr. Alice Green, who's our executive director, you know, being present, but also being featured. And a few other folks who had, you know, integral parts in you know, the civil rights movement, in particular around voting. And then after those excerpts, we'll actually show the full film of Good Trouble by John Lewis. The second week, which I believe is the 15th, we will show Searching for Timbuktu, directed by Paul Miller. And that movie is really around how people of color were given land to ensure that they had the ability to vote. And Paul Miller will be joining us on the 22nd. We will show Selma. And then on the 29th, we will show Becoming, the documentary by Michelle Obama. And so we're really excited about each of these films. Each of these films in some way, shape, or form touch on the importance of voting and why folks should get out and really cast their net through voting.
So you mentioned that Journey to Freedom, there will be excerpts shown. Is there an opportunity to see the full film for those who missed the premiere last weekend?
So I believe that it is on Siena's website. I believe it's siena.edu/MLK. I can send you the link where all of those films, including Dr. Green, is being featured. I believe on the third, they only showed a cut of that film as a promotional. But I believe that there are longer interviews that are going to be housed in their website.
So with Journey to Freedom and the director Paul Miller both being locally produced, what is coming out of this area that is creating a particular unique voice to this conversation?
I think each of these videos say that we're not afraid to talk about what our history is, but not only that we're not afraid to talk about what our history is, but that we can do it in such awesome and cool ways. And film, of course, is just one of the many ways we can do that. We can do that through music. We can do that through sound. We can do it through a lot of different avenues. But I think it gives people courage to be able to speak their truth. But not only speak their truth, but speak about what they're passionate about. Especially, and I'm a youth advocate, so when I speak about youth, when you see someone who's local that is that you can reach out and touch them, or you can meet the director or the persons that were in the film, it opens the door to so many other possibilities. I can be the same person, right, who developed and produced this film that highlighted a portion of my history or our history, so to speak, that can make positive and effective change in our community.
The Center for Law and Justice is co-hosting this event. Who else is on board? Who else is a part of this production of this event, the series?
So we're partnering with the Albany Housing Authority and the League of Women Voters. Albany Housing Authority has been gracious enough to help support with things like food, space, and also, you know, pushing the information out, you know, over their social media waves. And then the League of Women Voters will be with us every Thursday, and they'll be there to help support in getting people registered to vote if they're interested, answering any questions. And then they will also lead a discussion on the last Thursday, the 29th, around, again, the importance of voting, you know, why it's important to register, you know, where you can go, you know, all of those things we'll be highlighting through the League of Women Voters. The film series is also co-hosted by the Alice Moore Black Arts and Cultural Center. As people know in the community, we are working to support and get that center up and running. And so they are co-hosting the film series with us as well.
So where is the film series taking place, and where can listeners find more information around it?
Yep. So the film series this year is taking place at 200 South Pearl Street, which is the Albany Housing Authority headquarters in the atrium and community room. It will start at 5:30. So the doors will open, so to speak, at 5:30. The film will actually start at 6 o'clock. And if people are interested in learning more about the film series, there's two places that you can go. You can find the Center for Law and Justice on Facebook, and we've been putting up flyers related to the event coming up. And then you can also visit us at cflj.org/events in order to do that. Even though it says RSVP, you don't have to RSVP. It is a, you know, come in, you know, if you want and hang out with us for sure.
Oh, this is such a wonderful series. And to Sean Murdoch, I really appreciate you joining me in this conversation. What would you like to leave our listeners with?
We want people to, you know, keep an eye out on the Center for Law and Justice. We are really working to get ourselves back into, I mean, and really not even back into, but we're working to provide more education to the community on various topics like voting and other focus areas that we'll be coming out with soon. But not only that, we are working to make sure people provide their feedback and input on the new Alice Moore Black Arts and Cultural Center, and what they want to see come from, you know, a center that is, you know, housed around the arts and culture, and what that really looks like for our city in the coming months.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Hudson's Emily Ritz with the song Lonely Alone from her 2021 album In Love Alone.